Dear Chairman Burr and Chairman Schiff, I'm reporting an urgent concern in accordance with the procedures outlined in 50 U.S.C. 3033 K5A. This letter is unclassified when separated from the attachment. In the course of my official duties, I've received information from multiple U.S. government officials that the President of the United States is using the power of his office to solicit interference from a foreign country in the 2020 U.S. election. This interference includes, among other things, pressuring a foreign country to investigate one of the president's main domestic political rivals. The president's personal lawyer, Mr. Rudolph Giuliani, is a central figure in this effort. Attorney General Barr appears to be involved as well.
It is Friday, September 27th, 2019. It is impeachment week, everybody. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our Capitol muckraker-in-chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. And Sean is going to do his best today, despite having to deal with two major issues. Number one, the Eagles' victory last night and a bad case of popcorn lung. There we have it. On today's show, yes, it is impeachment. It is impeachment week, everybody. Will the Democrats really, really try hard to drop the ball and screw this all up? I think they're going to do their best. We shall see, but the train is moving fast. I have to say that. Hey, what's up with AFT President Randy Weingarten publicly backing away from Medicare for All a bit? And that's after kind of like the teachers seem to be kind of behind it. Very interesting. CNBC reports this week that Democratic Wall Street donors may actually back Trump if Warren is nominated. How about that? And if it's Bernie, they're just going to all, like, leave the country, apparently. I don't know. A UN climate report released this week shows that monumental change has already hit the world's oceans. Meanwhile, at the UN this week, Trump addresses the UN Assembly to say that the future does not belong to the globalists. That was, like, right before the whistleblower report hit the airwaves and the impeachment was underway. And that's how, you know, of course, Trump, before he went to the UN, he had to, you know, take to Twitter to mock 16-year-old climate activist Greta Thunberg, too, as well. So it was a banner week for there. And I have to say, you know, this is a huge couple of weeks for climate action. And guess what? Right? Impeachment. Boom. That's all we're going to hear about. Despite all that, today, the 27th, is a second day of climate strikes, global climate strikes, and already, like, upwards of 100,000, but at least tens of thousands of protesters have taken the streets of New Zealand at the beginning of the day as we see another round of climate strikes. In today's local focus, thousands of janitors from SEIU 32BJ shut down Rittenhouse Square yesterday to let residents know that their contract is set to expire on October 15th. And they, well, they're ready to strike. Governor Tom Wolf, get behind legalized pot. How about that? Climate crisis and the workplace. We're going to talk a little about this. I've been thinking a lot about kind of local action on some climate crisis stuff, and that's at Kutztown University in my neck of the woods, so we'll talk a little bit about that. And because back in August, Jared Odesky of Data for Progress released a short report focusing on what unions can do and are already doing to win green contracts, focusing on targeting their workplaces for climate action. All right, so what's interesting about that is, like, you know, hey, we don't need to wait for something from D.C. to come to us on high about the Green New Deal. We can start kind of acting as if it's on its way. And that includes our union contracts. And today's last call, well, we'll keep that brief today. Don't want to stress out Sean too much. All right, it is Friday after all. Our Oktoberfest celebration, well, that's Free Will speaking. They've got four of their Oktoberfest celebration this week. They've got a brand new beer, right? Something they haven't done before. It's called Hello from Somewhere. It's a Hefeweizen. brewed with a near 50-50 split of wheat and local Deer Creek Malt House Pilsner malt. Right, I'm looking really forward to that, especially after last week's releases. Whoo, man, they were so good. I'm telling you that currant and what is it called? The currant and chocolate one is just still blowing me away. But we'll kind of talk a little about that and see what else kind of comes our way. Remind everybody to tune in to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org or tune in to the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. And hey, while you're at it, make sure that you are listening to Rick's daily podcast. That's the Rick Smith Show, wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Podbean, SoundCloud, wherever. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. Now more than ever, holy crap, after this week, now more than ever, you can help support Pull No Punches' homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. That's it. $5, like a beer a month, folks. You're sitting there, you're watching your Eagles game with Sean, and you think, hey, I could throw Raging Chicken $5. That's how, like, $5 a month, absolutely. That's no problem. Just go to patreon.com/rcpress. And if you're not ready to become a member, you know, look, just go to ragingchickenpress.org, click that big blue donate button, and give us what you can. But the best way to support the movement and the media and keep the media and the movement is by becoming a member of Raging Chicken by going to patreon.com/rcpress today. Sean, man, congratulations on the Eagles win, and holy crap, we're going to impeachment.
It's like that, well, first of all, thank you. The Eagles saved their season last night, and most importantly, they saved our season. It's more important than the impeachment news that went on, especially those of us who are from Philadelphia or living in the Philadelphia area right now. The Eagles are off to a mediocre 2-2 start, and avoided a really bad 1-3 beginning to the season. So
there you go.
Good news on that. And then also the impeachment. Yeah.
Holy moly.
I think, like, we, so, you know, I had a surprise trip to Philly tomorrow, and I was able to, or yesterday, I was able to talk to you on the phone about this.
I understand. Time's a difficult concept, but go ahead.
Oh, yes, it is. It's like Back to the Future.
Exactly. Suddenly I'm fucking listening to disco music and I'm dressed in flares. I don't know what the hell the deal is. Like the 70s all over again.
It's 2019. Anything's possible.
Hey, well, what the hell, man?
But yeah, I, you know, we were talking about this yesterday. I feel like, you know, we are probably living in a radically different place right now than we were on Monday when we were recording the podcast.
I think that's right. I think that's right.
I mean, yeah, I mean, it's wow. I mean, I don't know, like, what really made this boil over. I guess
the Ukraine thing, obviously.
Well,
the
obviously,
thing.
But like it. Yeah, obviously it's the Ukraine thing. And
well, okay, but there's been some reporting on this, though. Ryan Grimm had some great reporting on this this past week, and as did David Dayan, right? And David Dayan was been talking about this. Well, the way that it broke in the media was obviously over the Ukraine thing, right? But David Dayan's been making the case that, look, that's not the only thing, right? So basically what you got to understand is that Nancy Pelosi has been, again, as we've talked about on this show, as has been discussed widely, that she has been the person who has been holding back the reins of impeachment, even as the number of representatives, Democratic representatives, have got on board with impeachment. She refused to move forward on it. And her assumption had always been that those quote unquote frontline Democrats, a term, by the way, I'm just going to put this out here. I hate that word. I hate that phrasing, frontline Democrats, because it's like, I don't even know where this freaking came from. But in other words, Democrats who basically won election, right, in areas that Trump had won, right, they tend to be quote unquote purple districts, right, kind of mixed, been held by Republicans before, right? Nancy Pelosi said she was always trying to protect those members, or at least that was the assumption, protect those members that would be put in jeopardy if we move forward with impeachment. What happened, however, is that in a recess, when members went went back to their districts, right, and did town halls and things like this, they didn't kind of like, you know, get a whole bunch of crowd saying, thank you for being moderate. What they
thank you for going after the squad and not going after, not standing alongside AOC, Omar,
exactly,
Ileana, or Ileana Presley, and
Ayanna Presley. You know, everyone,
Ayanna, and who's the last one I'm missing? Rashida Tlaib.
Rashida Tlaib, right, yeah.
I mean, no, they weren't praising them for standing up and standing strong to the squad. No, they were going after them saying, what the hell are you doing and why aren't you holding Trump accountable?
Right. We elected you in 2018 to hold this asshole accountable. And what have you done? Nothing. Right.
Yeah, and I mean, like, yeah. And again, that's all. I think it's pretty much the argument we like laid out. And, you know, I think that was probably a turning point. And also, like, you know, Corey Lewandowski was probably a turning point. And like,
yep.
And no, I mean, what happened with Trump is what happened this week. I absolutely believe that like Pelosi didn't know exactly what was going to happen after she announced the impeachment. I don't think I don't think we knew how bad the transcripts or that the notes were going to be and how bad the whistleblower report was going to be. I mean, like that the notes that were released Wednesday morning were just so damning beyond belief, and then the whistleblower report that was released yesterday was even worse than that. I mean, yeah. This looks like it's so egregious, it's so widespread within the administration that this is going to be like, I mean, here we are. Like we said, we're going to get to a point where there's going to be a constitutional crisis. Well, like this is it.
Yeah, here it is. We're here. welcome to it, everybody.
Yeah. I mean, we've been saying this for a few months, but no, like this is where it's going to end up. I mean, sure. Like they're going to turn us into Merrick Garland in the Senate and good. Let's do it.
Right.
Let's go on the offensive this time then. Let's not play defense on Merrick Garland or the impeachment. If McConnell wants to hold this up in the Senate and not have the trial, then you know what? Like, run on that.
Right.
Make it politically toxic. Like, I mean, like this, we're at the point now where Sam Cedar's been saying this for months. This isn't about like impeaching Trump. This is about tying an anchor around the necks of Republicans and giving them the option of like dumping Trump or to going down with them.
Well, I think it's a both and, right? It's not an either or. And this is, but you know, I mean, Cedar has been arguing, and I think rightfully that look, it's gotten.
The impeachment has to happen for the accountability issues and the absolute laws that he's broken.
Right, but he's also been saying like even for those like centrist Democrats like Pelosi, who are kind of, I don't even, that's even the wrong word, but those Democrats like Pelosi in leadership positions who've been holding back the reins is that on the grounds that it was going to be a political liability if they went forward with impeachment, that's shifted, right? Before all this stuff broke this week, where it was becoming increasingly a political liability for the Democrats.
To not impeach,
exactly. So that if they had gone through and not impeached, then this is going to be tied around, you know, the necks of the Democrats moving in the election. The fact that they did not hold someone accountable who was clearly, like, breaking the laws, right? And not only the fact that, you know, how many people absolutely hate this man. Right. And you know, for what he's done, again, talk about the temperament and all that kind of stuff. Set that aside for a second to say what he's actually done to people, like holding children in freaking cages at the border.
With this, I mean, like Trump has been used to be getting on to the offensive the whole entire time in office. And I mean, like, you boom, like Pelosi pulled that trigger with the impeachment, and you've just seen him unravel over the past several days.
Well, absolutely. And I think that, you
know, and like that, like was, I mean, like, yeah. And like, no, he would, and like, this would not have happened if she did not come out with the impeachment. I mean, like, you see like I think he's at the point where like he dared them to impeach him and it happened and now they don't have a plan.
Well, here's my concern. I want to talk about, say, the strategy for moving forward to impeachment in a second. But I want to also say, you know, if you remember on Monday, by Monday, we knew that Pelosi was going, when we had our show on Monday, Pelosi, we knew that Pelosi was going to make an announcement, right, on Tuesday, right? I believe that was the case. And that we knew that was coming, and we expected it was going to be about impeachment. And my concern at that point was that there wasn't going to be like an all-in commitment on it. And I have to say, when I saw her come out and gave her a press conference, it like I was like, we're screwed. Right. Because I thought like she's not really behind this, that she's actually saying she's actually using the words impeachment inquiry. But it's really status quo. Right. It's really that we're going to up our messaging game by saying we're doing this impeachment. But really, it felt to me like Pelosi just wanted things to keep on going where it is and make it appear like they were doing something as opposed to actually doing something. When we actually got like the transcript of the readout of Trump's phone call and then the whistleblower's report, that's where things switched, right? That was where kind of like Pelosi.
Okay, we're actually going to impeach him now.
Right, like, and Pelosi became irrelevant almost at that point, right? Where her control, she lost control over the ability to kind of pull the reins back on that. And that's a good damn thing.
Yeah. I know. I mean, she came out yesterday and she said this is a cover up. This is exactly what it is. The administration covered it up. And I mean, like, I was watching. This is like the first time I've watched like cable news in like months.
Yeah.
Like, just to see what they were saying. And I was watching Morning Joe yesterday before like the committee hearing was going to be coming on. And they were reading the report like as it came out, and like excerpts, just random pages, and just like, oh my god, this is just absolutely ridiculous, like all around. I mean, yeah, I'm gonna have to like listen to it and read it. But
yeah, what you heard, by the way, I should mention this, is that what you heard in the intro today was PRH Audio. They do a bunch of audiobooks and things like this. As a matter of fact, they're the company that produced the audiobook for one of Rachel Maddow's books or whatever. That's I watched the show last night, so I know that. But they took the whistleblower complaint once it was released, and they turned that around in about 2 hours, right? And had a full kind of professional audio readout of that posted on SoundCloud. So you can actually go, and there's going to be a link in the show notes today if you want to go and listen to that, or you can go to the Maddow blog and scroll down a little bit, and they have it kind of embedded there too as well. We're also going to embed it in our at our site, so you can listen to it. And it's read by Saskia Mareveld, who's kind of like, I guess she's won awards on this stuff, but it's worth the while, right? If you don't have the time to sit down and read that, it's like 9 pages or something like that, single spaced. Listen to her read it. It's worth just kind of like letting that kind of soak in a little bit. It's important for people to kind of see what we're actually talking about. So let me ask you, okay, Sean. So Sean and I were talking a little bit this before the show, I'll just lay out my concern, and then we can kind of sketch this out, because this is what's going to be happening. I was listening to NPR this morning, right, after I dropped my kids off for school, and listening to it on the kind of the car on the ride back, and then as I'm making my coffee, and there's a strong messaging push right now, right, from the Democratic side of things to say that we are going to focus like primarily just on the Ukraine thing, and that's it, right? And it's not being done directly by Nancy Pelosi and things like this, at least from what I heard this morning. But I kind of expected this, because you heard some kind of rings of this yesterday from Adam Schiff and some others, when they were really kind of saying that, yes, we're going to go after the Ukraine thing. And last night on Chris Hayes, for example, Adam Schiff was on there and he looked gleeful. And I'm telling you, I'm sorry, this is a total sidebar, but the Democrats, they think they're a hell of a lot smarter than they actually are. Right. They think they're smarter than everybody else in the room sometimes. And that becomes that's a detriment to the to these people, because Schiff came on. He said, as you could see, his face was like, we got him. We got him now. We got the smoking gun. And he was like gleeful about the Ukraine stuff. And Chris Hayes asked the correct question, in my view. And he said, OK, but what about everything else? Right. What about the emoluments clause that you guys have been talking about all the time? What about the obstruction of Congress and obstruction of justice you guys are talking about? Put the Mueller report aside. Right. But what about the kids in cages? Right. Say things that he did while he was in office. Are those going to be part of this, too, as well? Right. And Schiff, like you could see, like popped his bubble, and he's like all of a sudden like droopy dog up there being like, why are you going to make me my men when you go Ukraine? So I say that because this is my read on it, and then Sean could give you his perspective on it. Is that my read is this, is that just like if you're going to any kind of negotiation, you don't start from where you want to end up, right? You don't start with your least common denominator and stay there. The fact is that they, as many members of Congress have been saying for months, right, you have multiple egregious examples, impeachable examples, right, impeachable offenses that articles of impeachment could have been based upon. Right. And those are like what I'm talking about, the emoluments clause, right, about the kind of the obstruction of Congress, right, about the subverting of kind of like, you know, as people say, black letter law, about kind of forwarding whistleblower claims, a whole range of things like this. Right. Like I said, put the Mueller report aside. In my view, if you're going to go here for articles of impeachment, you need to do two things. Like, one, you don't start from just one and that's it and put all your eggs in one basket. You start with a range of things, right? And you know, going in, that some of those things you may have to kind of get up to appease some of your members, right? Especially the ones that are kind of like, you know, a little bit more kind of difficult to prove or something like this, or something that seems to be, appears to some people to be more kind of like ideologically driven or something like that. But you take a bunch of those stuff and then you allow some of that discussion to happen in a public space, and you can kind of, you know, do it in a couple of weeks to narrow down what those articles of impeachments will be. And then you move forward with those in a very deliberate way. And apparently, which I was happy to hear, they did hire outside counsel to kind of pursue. So thank God for that, because I don't trust the Democrats for a second on this. But the idea was that you go forward with, say you have a, I don't know, I mean, 5, 6, 7, or can maybe, you know, subcategories of articles for your kind of impeachment, and that's what you base it on. And that what your crown jewel is this Ukraine stuff, because you've got the smoking gun, you've got an admissions, right, kind of by Trump himself that he did this thing. Right. And you have the opportunity to implicate, not even opportunity, but there's a bunch of other people that are directly implicated in the cover up, especially when they find out they took the actual electronic copy of the transcript of this phone call, right, to Ukraine, and they hid it on a covert action server, basically, right? This kind of ultra kind of like covert code word level access to, right? And the whistleblower says this was not the first time, which means that they've done other things there too as well. So I think that's your crown jewel, and then you bring in all this other stuff that's going to bring together the caucus.
I think that, like, right now, I think it's just – I think that the investigation part is – I'm actually okay with it being completely being focused on what happened with Ukraine, because I feel like there's going to be a lot more to come from that. Like, yeah, there should be impeachment stuff, I think, with the Stormy Daniels money and being co-conspirator number one and stuff like that, you know, mentioned in the like from the Mueller report and the obstruction of justice. But like, I think that, like, right now that, like, that stuff's already out there in the public and we know that. But like, I feel like that, at least from an investigation standpoint, from a committee standpoint, everything should be focused on Ukraine, because you don't know how far that goes, and you don't know, like, what actions you can draw up. I probably, like, multiple articles of impeachment just from snooping around with that. Like, I mean, there's stuff that's already out there, but like, how much deeper does this go, and how many other people know it, and how many other times has this happened? Like, I feel like I feel like from this investigation alone, you can probably draw up multiple articles of impeachment.
Well, look, I want to make a distinction here. I want to make a distinction between some of the other things that I've been talking about, right? Because look, I'm making a clear line here.
But I feel like the other stuff's already out there in public light. We know that. But like,
it's impeachable. It's an impeachable offense that is committed, that he committed while in office. Like I said, I'm not talking about the Robert Mueller stuff.
Yeah,
I'm talking about, like, what he's done since he's been in office.
Okay, so for instance, like, kids in cages, right? Is that an impeachable offense?
Yes.
Or is that a policy point?
No, that's an impeachable offense, because it's a political matter that you can say this is in violation of the kind of the central kind of concerns of this nation, right? That it's violating, that it's negatively impacting us globally. He's gone around the law. He's violated the law multiple times. And how do we know this? Because it's been returned against for the courts again and again, right? I would guess, right, for me personally, I would think that should be in there because of how egregious it was that you actually had kids killed by that policy as a direct result. So let me just finish my thought. That was a direct result of that, right? Now, practically speaking, given what I know about the Democrats in office, my guess is that would be one of the things that would probably be dropped, right, from the articles there. But without having that acknowledged up front in this process, I think is a mistake. And then the follow up to that is that the other things, you don't need to do the investigation of all the emoluments and the obstruction of Congress. That's done. So you fold that in. It doesn't require any work. And this is where I agree with you. The investigation, right? Any new hearings and investigation should focus entirely on this. Right? But also, you fold in this other stuff.
And also, I mean, a lot of this stuff, like with the immigration, are going to be central political issues, right? I mean, like whether people like it or not, this is now an election issue.
Yeah, like, no, absolutely.
This is an election issue, and Democrats are going to have to, like, you know, Sam Sear was saying it this week. This is the first time Democrats actually have nationalized an election.
Yep.
And galvanize around something.
Yep.
I mean, like, pretty much, like, people came out and voted last year to impeach Donald Trump.
Yep.
Or get rid of Donald Trump because they hated him that much.
Yep.
And it's, I mean, you're hearing, I don't know. Like, at what point do, like, the Republicans turn this into a point? I guess I'm playing devil's advocate here, but it's like, you know, Democrats aren't great messaging with this stuff. But, like, at what point, like, if you just start tacking on articles of impeachment, were they just saying, oh, look, they're just doing nothing but airing out their grievances?
Look, they can say whatever you want. Like, but the thing is, look, you've got to, like, they don't have to message around it, is my point. That's already been done. You've already found egregious examples, impeachable offenses, right? That's happening already in the committees, right? And this is the one thing that was smart about what Pelosi said is, like, look, the investigations are already there. We're going to ask the committees which to kind of send some things forward. That's smart because you can basically say the committees have already done that work. All the messaging and all the focus is going to be around Ukraine. So you think about it like this, is like, every hearing that's on TV, every investigation that's taking place, every newscast is about this unfolding kind of like horror that is what Trump did with Ukraine. And with Fox News, yes, they're going to say, and Republicans are going to try to say, yes, and there's other things they're tacking on. But who's talking about them?
Yeah.
Right? They're just going to be there on a list. Right. And then when it comes to that, and there's the case to make, there's the case to make about why these are impeachment, that comes in the final the filings.
I mean, I feel like there should be like at least 3, 4, 5, like, I mean, like, articles that are drafted up. But it's like, I don't know. I think it's going to have to be done strategically, but it's.
Let me put it like this. Think about the messaging on this. Right. The messaging on this, we have to hold him accountable. Right. But the only thing that matters really to us is what this conversation he had with Ukraine. And if you're taking your election is going to be based, right? This is where the political calculus, in my view, does come in. Is going to be about holding this guy accountable, right? And you're telling me that all the crimes that were committed, right, and all the horrors that he committed up until now really didn't matter to you, Democrats. The only thing that mattered was when it became an international issue about national security, right? And that, I think, is going to piss off a lot of people in the base, right? They did, like, nobody elected people to hold Donald Trump accountable because of his role in national security.
I don't see the base fighting over which. I don't know. I feel like if he gets impeached, the base is going to be happy either way. I don't think the base is going to be fighting. I don't think the base is going to be fighting over, like, which, like, I don't know. I feel like we've already ripped off so much of a Band-Aid where so much open of a open the Pandora's box where it's not going back.
I'm just saying, you got an opportunity here to unify the party, right, behind both the impeachment, right, and a direction forward. And my concern is that I've been watching stuff on cable news, and who are the people that Democrats are rolling out here? They're rolling out all their national security people.
That's what they always do.
Well, that's my point.
Like, they're not going to be rolling out, like, AOC and Tlaib.
I'm not saying they're going to do that. Of course they're not going to do that. But what I'm saying is that it's like, if which candidates who are running for the president right now represent that constituency? It's not Bernie, and it's not Warren. Basically, what you make everything about, like the very thing that will get that will potentially bolster those candidates that are in the center or to the right in the Democratic Party.
I don't think so.
Okay, we'll see.
Because the center candidates don't want the impeachment happening.
They do now, on the grounds of national security. That's my point.
I think that's just going in too much into it. I don't know.
We shall see. I'm going to play it out. I know it's a lot to think about, Sean. It's going to take some work.
No, I just think like I think the impeachment's here. I think you're looking into it a bit.
Oh, I know I am. I'm trying to I'm trying to look at consequences instead of just what we normally do. It's fucking look at what's at the end of our nose, right? I mean, you need to strategize over long term, not just for what's happening next week. And that's my concern. Is that, you know, you think about what Democrats have been horrible on this. This is an opportunity to kind of make sure that people are kind of moving in the right direction. And even if in the end it boils down to one or two articles of impeachment, at least if those articles are there initially, right? So the public we're focusing. This is the guy, and these are the policies, and these are the things. Here's the most egregious example, which is probably going to where we're going to end up with some other things that are coming in there. Just saying.
It'll be interesting to see what else happens. I mean, I feel like you can already get him for obstruction of justice. You can get him for FEC violations and stuff like that are felonies. Like, yeah, those are impeachable offenses as well that should be tacked on. I mean,
it's not a tack on. That's not that. I disagree with your language on that. It's not attacking it on. It's basically saying this: is that you're setting a precedent that you're saying it is okay to obstruct Congress moving forward. That is not impeachable because you didn't act on it. Right, it is okay to actually use the office for your own personal gain through the emoluments clause by having people stay in your hotels because that we're not impeaching them on that. Right,
we're also saying this right now when we don't know like where this is going.
I'm just saying. I know. I'm telling you where my concerns is. I said that at the beginning. These are my concerns. This is what I think should happen. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm the last person in the world who has access to the internal workings of the Democratic Party. I know that you're kind of a rising figure in the party, so you probably know better than I do. No, I mean, young Democrats, man. Right? Young Democrats. You're the labor guy for young Democrats, right? Oh, I made Sean mad. I made Sean mad. Anyways, well, we shall see. So hopefully Sean is right and everyone is going to be happy and they're just going to be like, hey, we're going to impeach this guy and everyone's going to rally behind each other and we're going to end up with Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren in the office. I really hope that I'm wrong. I really hope that the Democrats know what they're doing. I know we've got a lot of precedent to know that Democrats do have a strong hold on their on kind of how you conduct politics and how you build movements. So if you can hear my sarcasm, there it is. Well, crazy. But anything else on this week, Sean?
No, nothing else on the impeachment front.
Nothing else on the impeachment front. Well, the one thing I wanted to say here, I mentioned this in a bit, is like, I'm going to have there's a link to have this article that I just published on from AFT president about AFT president Randy Weingarten kind of publicly backing away from support of Medicare for All. And we got to watch these movements, right? Because watch what's actually happening with some of these leaders and why they're doing this, right? Because remember, there was a lot of anger with Randy Weingarten during the 2016 election from actually rank and file members of the AFT, in part because she pushed for an early support for Hillary Clinton in the election before the members actually had a chance to vote on that, right? I even believe we talked about this at the time, and that was that pissed a lot of people off, right? And her argument was that they wanted to get in early to ensure that they had a seat at the table, blah, 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 blah. But we see a similar dynamic happening here, except members, right, of course, have been energized by kind of like, you know, national strikes. And now we see the Chicago teachers, right, are kind of ready to strike again. And there's some pushback for Randy Weingarten kind of saying that, well, maybe like the public option or maybe that we, you know, this whole Medicare for All thing isn't so great. But I'll have a link to an article in there for people to check out and just to be on alert of. The other thing that the CNBC reported that Democratic Wall Street donors may back Trump if Warren is nominated. So you basically see him. I've been wondering when this shoe was going to drop in this kind of overt way, where you had, you know, these Democratic Wall Street folks who've been kind of backing people like Joe Biden, people like Barack Obama, you know, people like Bill Clinton, are now going to kind of break ranks when it comes to them losing their access and actually having somebody in office that or potentially in office that is going to kind of regulate them the way they should be regulated. So we shall see. Right now, I find it hard to believe that you're going to get super strong support from Wall Street for these Democratic donors or Wall Street to actually back Trump. However, this is the threat that they're actually wielding at this point. So. And then finally, with the UN climate report, you know, look, bad stuff for the world's oceans, everybody. And, you know, in some ways, this seems to happen again and again when you have the focus on climate change. Something else like so dramatic, like, I don't know, impeachment kind of enters into the discussion and it really sucks all the air out of the climate discussion, right? Again, part of my concern here is that we've turned our attention solely on impeachment, and then what the results are of that climate action summit and the commitments that we still need to kind of be making moving forward in terms of CO2 reduction and emissions reductions is just going to get put on the back burner once again until, you know, the future when we get somebody else in office or something like this. But something to watch out for. But yeah. Anything else on that stuff, Sean?
No. I mean, I don't know. No. I was going to say, like, I guess now Warren, I guess Bernie Bros are going to stop attacking Warren.
Yeah, I mean.
The Michael Brooks wing of the party.
Yeah, he's kind of annoying me, I have to say.
I listened to like the first 5 minutes of the second half yesterday, and I just stopped.
I couldn't do it. It's like, you know, and again, please don't hear this, everybody, as me saying that, like, I am saying that because I'm all behind, like, Elizabeth Warren, right? If I want to be perfect 100%, like, above board about kind of where I am on all this, I think that everything that this nomination is going to be kind of wrapped up before we ever get a chance to vote on this in Pennsylvania, right? That's what I believe, right? And especially since you've got Super Tuesday and you've got all these big delegate counts happening sooner, we're gonna have a really clear picture by the time it comes to Pennsylvania about who's gonna be out in front. And my thought process at this point is like, I want to make sure that I am not locking in kind of any in just in one camp against all the other camps that in a way that could actually inhibit progressive organizing on the ground kind of moving forward. Right. And pressuring whoever ever gets in office. But that's me. So we shall see. Just stop it, everybody. Stop. Just stop. Right. Keep the organizing going. Right. Back. If you're all in for Bernie, if you're all in for Warren, have at it. Right. But seriously, right. Save your like your targets for Joe Biden. Right. Because that would be the disaster. All right. Anyways, we will be back very shortly. We're going to kind of talk about what's happening here in Pennsylvania. But this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. I want to remind you that you can become a member of Raging Chicken Press for a little $5 a month by going to patreon.com/RCPress and becoming a member today. We'll be back right after this quick break.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1909. That was the day the International Lady Garment Workers Union began a strike against the Triangle Shirtwaist Company. Eventually, female workers struck at 339 of the 352 shirtwaist manufacturing firms in New York City. The strike was referred to as the Uprising of 20,000. Women comprised 70% of all garment workers. Men performed the higher paid work of cutting and pressing, while women earned less for assembling and finishing garments. Women often had to furnish their own supplies, including needles, thread, and even sewing machines. Some firms locked the doors to each floor. The workers, mostly young girls and women, had to ask permission to go to the bathroom. While the strike initially started at the Triangle Shirtwaist Company, it soon spread to other factories. At a meeting of garment workers in November, a young girl, Clara Lemlich, called for a general strike. One day later, 15,000 shirtwaist workers walked out of the factories, with more joining the strike the following day. The strike continued until February 1910 and ended with factory owners agreeing to meet the demands of the workers, which included better pay and shorter hours. This strike was a notable achievement for these mostly immigrant working women. Nevertheless, garment workers after the 1909 strike continued to suffer harsh working conditions. A year later, many workers died in the tragic Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire. The fact that the company locked the doors on each floor meant that the workers had no means of escaping the blaze. Today, it's very difficult to find clothing that is union-made. We must work together to restore labor unions to protect the safety of those who make our clothing, both in the United States and throughout the world. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to Raging Chickens Out to Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney here once again with Sean Kitchen, kind of moving into a little bit statewide politics. Sean, what's going on? You got this stuff about SEIU 32BJ shutting down Rittenhouse Square.
Yes. So yesterday I had to go into Philadelphia. There was a pretty large labor action in the city. Members from 32BJ came in from all over the East Coast, Pittsburgh, Connecticut, Boston, D.C., Virginia, New York, New Jersey, workers, you know, janitors from all these cities to come in and support the Philadelphia workers who their contract expires on the October 15th. And they came out and sent a message saying, hey, we shut down Rittenhouse Square today. We'll shut down Center City. It wants the contract to expire and we don't have a new contract and we go on strike.
Nice. So what was the action like?
It was pretty nice. The two marches took off from one from like Love Park to Rittenhouse Square, the other one from 20th and Market down and over to Rittenhouse Square. It was just nice. Like it was a nice labor rally with a few thousand people there. From SEIU, everyone was out wearing their purple shirts and everything. So, no, it was a nice rally.
That's awesome. Well, you know, on that same score, I didn't mention this up top. I should have. I'm gonna definitely put in the title in the show notes for here. Recall it. UAW has been on strike, right? And on Saturday, there is going to be a rally in solidarity with UAW members on strike in Langhorne, Pennsylvania. That is going to be Saturday, September 28th. That is tomorrow at 12 noon. And that's at 200 Cabot Boulevard East in Langhorne. I will put that in the show notes. I'll put the link to the information on that. But if you are kind of in the Langhorne area, it'd be great to kind of show up and kind of be part of that action. So there's great labor stuff that's going on right now. The stuff in Rittenhouse Square was fantastic. And again, it's the kind of militancy I think we need in the labor movement.
Yeah. And, you know, pretty much like one of the things that Gabe Morgan, president of 32BJ, was pretty much saying, it's like Rittenhouse Square is the richest section of the city. And, you know, like the people who have been doing really well in Philadelphia have been the rich over the past 10 and 20 years. And poverty has, you know, slightly decreased with over the past couple of years. You know, like these are the people that, you know, like workers make their wealth possible, and yep, it's time for them to get a piece of that pie.
Yep.
And that was pretty much the point of yesterday's message. Like, it's time for our fair share. You know, like, they wouldn't, we create this wealth, you know, the wealth that these people have living in our square are dependent upon the janitors, the people that clean up their buildings. And, you know, it's time that we get a piece of that pie. So good on them.
Yeah, good on them. That's absolutely true. So awesome. So here we go. Here we go. So October 15th is when the contract will be expiring, and SEIU 32BJ, in classic example, by the way, of SEIU 32BJ, they've been kind of strong, active, publicly militant union for quite some time. So here we go. So Sean, Tom Wolf, man, I guess he got to his happy place.
I mean, I guess this is not pretty – it's not surprising. He's now supporting the legalization of marijuana in Pennsylvania.
So you have any – what caused a sudden turn of, change of mind here?
I think that pretty much Wolf was going to come out in support of marijuana regardless, just from last year. I came out against it during the primary, but I think those fires were put down pretty quickly by people, by activists and others, that the governor would be coming out in support of it by some point next year. And, you know, good on Lieutenant Governor Fetterman for putting the work together and getting that report out there.
Yeah, fantastic. And, you know, it's good timing, too, as well. So before the 2020 elections hit full scale, that's yet another issue to make sure that that people are going to get behind. That's a good deal.
And you know who, like, would really benefit from this?
Governor Wolf.
I was going to say Mike Terzai.
Mike Terzai! Mike Terzai! Yes, indeed. Why do you think Mike Terzai would do that? You know, Sean, I just don't know. Is it because...
You don't really care about the kids? What you care about is a monopoly and special interests. So...
Yeah. So is that why?
Well, I don't know. I think it maybe because we already have a monopoly in place known as the liquor store.
Did you know that?
Mm-hmm. I did.
I bet you did not.
I can't believe we don't have this in the show notes. I didn't read this up top because, like, that was like the Mike Terzai thing this week was freaking crazy. Right?
What Mike Terzai thing?
The Mike Terzai thing. Come on, it's like national news, right? Mike.
We talked about this on Monday.
We did this? No, but it's national news now, right? It's like we talked about it on Monday. It was freaking hilarious.
Now this made it,
and now this made it national, right? And this guy is just kind of like spinning out of control because he's so ridiculous. And you had the Democrats in, you know, again, kudos to them. Like, Democrats and activists in the House this week, right? The state House, right?
So like, every House member.
Yeah.
Like the caucus made up, like, I guess, 11 by 17-inch signs. Exact copies of the signs that Mike Terzai was offended by. And so they're all now like posting the signs on their doors inside the halls of the Capitol and on different, like, the majority or minority caucus doors and stuff like that.
Which is freaking awesome. I mean, about time there's some like energy there. I mean, and you remember what the sign said, everybody? It says, "I love public schools." That's the one that Terzai said, like, you know, your sign offends me. Right? I mean, come on. So that was that video and the Terzai thing continues to have legs, which is great. I love seeing that where it's not just kind of like, you know, it makes a little small splash, but this has actually been amplified several times over. So kudos to you once again, Sean.
Yes, thank you. still cannot believe. I love the now this mashup because it pretty much like provides a template of every attack ad on this issue against Mike Terzai. I hope he just gets like carpet bombed with these ads like in his district, because like apparently, like from what I heard, that the public school teachers in his district still apparently appreciate him as a representative, but these are also like some of the best public schools in the country too, so this is like really good messaging to go after them.
You don't really care about the kids. What you care about is a monopoly and special interests.
There you go. That's good old Mike Terzai.
Do you know what he did the next day? What did
he do the next day?
In his newsletter, he had a poster. He took a picture with him and like this 100-year-old like retired school teacher saying he cares about teachers.
He cares about teachers. I care about teachers. I care about teachers a lot.
Did you know that?
Mm-hmm. I did.
I bet you did not.
I think like the best part about that soundbite there is like the next second, like when he goes, "I bet you didn't know that," and Laurie Lebo goes, "Oh, you think you're dealing with a novice here?"
You see that like little bit of like, you know, twitch in his eye at that point, right?
Like, oh boy. Yeah, like that's like the best part. It's like, oh, you're thinking you're dealing with a novice here.
Right, exactly. Mistake, buddy. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, to close this out, we're going to, you know, keep it kind of relatively condensed today, again, because I already hear Sean, the rustling in Sean's lungs coming through on the mic, so I want to make sure that doesn't cause a problem. But so here's the deal. So I posted something up on Facebook this week. I've been, as you all know, I mean, if you've been listening to this show, I've been talking a lot about climate change for a while. But as a matter of fact, climate change and fossil fuel, the stuff happening with fossil fuels in this state and around thing has been really kind of a featured focus of Raging Chicken since the very beginning, since back in 2011. And the attention has only kind of increased kind of over time, especially with the warnings from the UN and increasingly more dire scientific reports and some of the books that have been published. Naomi Klein's book, for example, we talked a little bit about On Fire, was released this past week. The Uninhabitable Earth by David Wallace Wells has been released. And there's been some real kind of concerted focus on this stuff. But the Greta Thunberg's kind of speech before the UN this past week, which you heard in the intro on Monday, and the kind of massive uptick in their kind of activism is really kind of, I don't know, forced me, I guess, to really consider, well, okay, what do I do, right? I mean, how do I have more of an impact on this issue that I'm having already, right? And so I began thinking a lot about this. And I do this exercise in my classes, in my some of my composition classes when we're dealing with research. And it's not exactly like this year because we had these courses got changed up and everything, and but let's put that aside. But we used to do this in the past. And the idea is that you want to investigate a particular topic, right? Especially those ones that feel bigger, you know, bigger and can produce kind of cynicism, right? Because they feel so big that there's nothing you can do, right? And things like, you know, institutional racism, things like climate change, things like kind of sexual violence and sexual discrimination, right? They can very often feel, and those are just examples, feel like, you know, hugely problematic and there's nothing you can do about this stuff. Neoliberalism, right? Another one of them. So what we try to do in my class is that we start with one issue and we kind of drill deep on that and then say, okay, now that we've researched this thing and now we've kind of examined it, instead of trying to like write a paper or something like this about some very broad kind of ideas about what is the correct stance on all this crap, start thinking about local. Start going from the ground up and say, okay, if this issue matters and is important, right, how do we begin to address that at a local level, right, in a very concrete way? Right. And so what I've done for the past kind of few years is that focus has been that first part of that class, the focus has been on climate change. Right. And so I guess I had those same processes kind of come back to me and asking myself that same question. Well, if I am so troubled as I am, I have not even touched the surface on this program about how much has been preoccupying my thoughts of late. How do I actually have an impact on this stuff? And I said, well, look, what's basically the same thing that you're asking of your students, right? Is basically to turn around and say, okay, it's one thing to address it thing. It's another thing to have a class which kind of inquires into that. It's yet another thing. That another step forward is actually then practicing what I preach, right? And basically saying, okay, if we know the cause of climate change, if we know the dire situation we have, I have a thing on my door that says we have 12 and that's crossed out says 11 years. If that's our time frame, how do I begin to act on this stuff? And that's kind of what I was posting out on Facebook. And had some other people kind of come in. And it's also always interesting with academics, because a lot of times academics get on very much on board with the curricular side of it, saying, yes, we're going to, you know, we have more courses on this kind of stuff, right? But they're, I don't know about kind of having getting planet, like solar panels on the buildings, right? I don't know about the material stuff. But I think really that's where we've got to start focusing, because that's, I mean, it's not the classroom that's producing the emissions, it's the institution. So I started thinking very started the process. I'll be honest with you. I'm not far down this road at this point. I'll think of exactly how to do this, but I've been researching into this and thinking about how to approach it. Who might actually be on board with this? Saying, well, we have a union, we have a faculty union, and we have a contract, right? And what are the ways that we can build that into the contract? Right, build, can I say, the transition, like, so instead of the Green New Deal, instead of it being some sort of abstract thing that we have to wait for something happening in Washington, what if we start acting from those principles now? And the number one thing is like, well, okay, what is the energy consumption of the university? What's its climate impact? What's its carbon imprint? And how do we reduce that? And how do we not do that, not just as a PR thing? Because that's what all institutions do. They say, yeah, we're green. Yay, look what we're doing. But you want kind of hard targets, and you want to be accountability built into that. And it so happens that in this past August, Jared Odesky of Data for Progress released a short report, right? And the report is called, like, it's like Green New Deal for Unions or something along these lines. And a Green New Deal support for union members. And basically, it's finding the support among union members, right, with the exception, notable exception, of so those folks who are working on the pipelines and the extractive industries, there's increasing numbers of union members that are supporting the Green New Deal specifically. Right. And matter of fact, in the poll that they cite in this report, 50% of Americans polled, right, either strongly support or somewhat support the Green New Deal. That's huge. So then what does it look like to begin practicing what we preach? And I was thinking back to what was happening during the actual, you know, the original New Deal, when you basically had an unleashing of the kind of, say, social laboratory, so to speak. And you said, OK, look, yes, we've got this national policy, but the national policy isn't where it starts and ends. It's actually how it gets implemented on the ground. And so there was like unleash all these creative opportunities to begin to implementing this different vision of the world. Right. And it was remarkable. And so I was thinking that that's the same thing here. Right. Now, again, I recognize if we were able to kind of actually get, say, solar panels on buildings at Kutztown University, for example, that's not going to solve the climate crisis. Right. But that is certainly the kind of work that needs to be done in order for that to happen. And we're getting experience both as faculty members, as students, as staff members, and how to make a case for those things from the ground up at the movement level instead of relying upon leaders to implement things. And the interesting thing about this and this piece from Data for Progress, and that's exactly what they're doing. And there was a report that's cited in here that basically started looking at language that's actually embedded in contracts, union contracts around the country, where they've been able to get some pretty significant kind of moves in the direction toward green contracts, as they're calling that, right? And that includes things like, for example, workers' boards, right? And having workers on a panel, on a board with management, making decisions, and then being able to have concrete accountability measures kind of built into that. Right. So you avoid the, you know, the whole idea about just kind of resorting to kind of public relations schemes. And if you look at the Green New Deal and specifically, that's one of those calls, right, to have more of this kind of shared governance over the kind of the future economy, the emerging economy of the Green New Deal. And it's those boards. But frankly, we don't generally operate like that. So, again, Kutztown University, that's small. But then our union contract, right, is, you know, 14 state university schools, right? That's over 100,000 students, right? That's dispersed across the state. And Pennsylvania, right, is like the third largest emitters of carbon of all the states in the country. So that seems to me to be a significant thing to think about and actually to organize around. So this is kind of something I'm going to be pursuing. And we just got, you know, we've heard me talk on Monday about this kind of like, you know, abstract kind of commitment and principle contract thing we got going on. We got a little bit more information about that from our statewide, but not much. I mean, still, we don't know what the hell's in it. But we'll kind of, I'll put that aside for the moment. But what we did find out is it's supposedly going to be a 4-year contract, right? If this gets approved. So that means we've got a 4-year stand of time to think about how to begin to pressure for this policy, both starting locally at the universities, right? And then to argue for it as members, right? As collectively argue for that, to have that included in our contract with hard targets. So, again, I'll put the links for this stuff kind of in the show notes. Check it out. But if you're interested in this kind of stuff, please hit me up at ragingchickenpress@gmail.com. This would be something that I'm kind of I am very interested in kind of seeing kind of what can happen, say, locally or even kind of statewide on this stuff as a way to pursue. And if you think I'm just being ridiculous about it, just let me know. I'll hear that, too, as well. But I want to find other ways of really kind of spending my time and energy, both in my community and in my workplace, right, in a very material sense, not an abstract sense, you know, other than just electoral politics. Right. If we really believe that the power is in the movements, right, and not in just kind of elected officials or the people at the top of the scale, then how do we actually kind of really think in movement terms about where we could have an impact and where our pressure points are? So that's just the info I wanted you to kind of, you know, kind of throw out there. Some things I've been thinking about and so on. And, you know, I'm curious what you think. So let me know. Let us know on our Facebook page, comments in the podcast, or hit me up at, you know, either at RC Press on Twitter or at RagingChickenPress@gmail.com. I'd love to hear your feedback. So, Sean, anything else going on in Pennsylvania you want to highlight?
No, nothing else too much is going on. No. Legislature won't be back till the end of October, so.
So you get a little break. Good. I know you're practically worked to the bone. So I'm glad you're going to get a chance to sit back a little bit, enjoy some of this amazing weather. So,
yeah, well, I'm going to be doing that as soon as we get off.
Yeah, as soon as we get off, which I'm going to delay Sean's ability to do so for just one more time. We're going to take one more quick break. We're going to come back with this week's Last Call. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We'll be back right after this. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull-no-punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. It's our last call. That's where we talk about beer, we talk about space news, talk about anything else kind of going on that's generally outside the parameters of the rest of our podcast. It exists where we sit there and have a little discussion of the range of different things, and we get to talk about what we've been imbibing for a while. So I just want to highlight, don't have any space news this week. Well, one thing, actually, I'll just put this out there. NASA has got this awesome new black hole simulator, right? So you can actually kind of see kind of like how the stuff works and things like this. So if I'm putting NASA black hole simulator in Google and search for it, there you go. Also, I forgot to mention up top, because it's a big day for Google, it's Google's 21st birthday today. Like, I don't care. But they're the empire that they're, you know, they're the empire. I'm just telling you. Just letting you know. But the big news of the week, once again, all right, free will release. What is the free will release? You know, and I wish I had more time, which I can explore more things other than just the beer, the brewery that's down the street from me. But, you know, hey, that, you do what you can do. And they've got a brand new beer that's coming out this, will be released tomorrow on the 28th, September 28th. It's called Hello from Somewhere. It's a Hefeweizen brewed with near 50-50 split of wheat and local Deer Creek Malthouse Pilsner malt. And they have, this is their description, it's delicately hopped with saaz and fermented with a traditional German strain. Classic yeast esters prevail with notes of banana, lemon, and spice, followed by a refreshing crisp finish. And it comes at only 4.5% ABV, so definitely a sessionable beer. So you pick that up, and they'll be available on draft and in cans on Saturday at both the Perkasie and Peddler's Village locations. So, there you have it. I also have a bit of sad news from here at Perkasie. I could have talked about this on Monday, but I just, it's really upset me. But the Down to Earth Cafe and the bread, Down to Earth Cafe, right, and the bread basket and bakery here in Perkasie, which was tied into kind of sustainable communities and organic stuff, and had purchased things locally, and I've talked about on the show before, Ryman Maxwell, who's kind of ran the place. It had just become a real community hub, and their new place that they opened up, I think it's less than a year ago, was amazing. And I used to go there whenever I could. We'd go there for lunch and get coffee and stuff. They're just closing their doors. And it's going to be a serious loss to our community here in Perkasie. I wish Ryman and everyone else, the bakers who made the most amazing bread, that, I mean, if that was what my staple, I'd go by at least once a week to pick up a couple loaves of bread for the house. And then I'd get some coffee there at times, you know, even the beans. And it's a loss to our community. And, you know, it's the very kind of business that I think that we should be investing in. And he had everything right. But, you know, look, part of the deal is real estate developers and what the price they want out of stuff. And part of it is, like, it's, you know, starting stuff is an uphill business or uphill battle. So all the best to Ryman and his family, and to everyone who worked at Down to Earth Cafe and the Bread Box and Bakery. I wish you well. And I hope to God that that corner, that central corner of Perkasie, picks up where he left off. So that's my kudos to them, and I'm sad for that. So Sean, man, you got anything else going on this weekend?
My parents are coming up.
Oh, so, cool. Nice.
Yeah. So we're going out for lunch tomorrow. My niece is coming up, so yeah. And then my sister had her baby.
Oh, when?
A couple days ago.
Oh, man, that's huge news.
So I am an uncle again. So,
oh, my God. It's awesome. Boy or girl?
Boy. My name? Nephew came. Cameron came out at like 7 pounds.
Whoa, nice.
Yeah, so.
Okay, but please pass on my congratulations to her.
I definitely will.
And well wishes. Seriously, that's great. And she's doing okay?
Yeah. So my sister is in nursing school right now, and she has a test on Monday. So she's going in to take her test on Monday and then taking a few weeks off.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Yeah. So what's the older sibling in the household think about all this? Have you had a chance to?
I have not had a chance to go down yet.
Oh, cool. Oh, man. Well, that is awesome news. Well, and it's mm-hmm. it looks like the weather is going to be awesome for your folks to kind of come out and visit and everything. That's great. You should tell them they should swing by Free Will and pick up some of that blackcurrant and chocolate mash. I'm telling you, it's worth it, Sean. Sean's like, whatever. I'm not going to listen to you anymore. I'm tired.
Blackcurrant mash? What's that?
It's called blackcurrant and chocolate mash. I'm telling you, it's so freaking good. It's so good. But you don't have to trust me. It's a sour, right? It's freaking awesome. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he's a whatever, doesn't believe me. So everyone else out there, believe me. Sean's just going to go. He's got his Twitter is calling him, so I better let him go. So anyways, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Thanks for y'all sticking with us. Have an awesome weekend. Looks like it's going to be a great one. And here's all forward for impeachment.
Dear Chairman Burr and Chairman Schiff, I'm reporting an urgent concern in accordance with the procedures outlined in 50 U.S.C. 3033 K5A. This letter is unclassified when separated from the attachment. In the course of my official duties, I've received information from multiple U.S. government officials that the President of the United States is using the power of his office to solicit interference from a foreign country in the 2020 U.S. election. This interference includes, among other things, pressuring a foreign country to investigate one of the president's main domestic political rivals. The president's personal lawyer, Mr. Rudolph Giuliani, is a central figure in this effort. Attorney General Barr appears to be involved as well.